Our next guest is Mr. Curtis Greco, the founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. He is an author, blogger, and an engaging public speaker. His most recent work, the three-volume series entitled Blind Vision, articulates a direct challenge to the political, judicial, and economic demagogues of the day. Mr. Greco, thank you so much for joining us.
Ms. Scally, my pleasure to be with you again. Thank you.
Well, you know, I want to ask your opinion about something maybe a little bit off topic. I know for the majority of the time you seem to be talking about the economy, which is certainly very important, but I want to veer off of that for just a moment if we can and talk about the TSA.
Good. It's your favorite topic.
Well, there's just so many people. It astounds me, actually, that they have been able to get away with this overreach in an ineffective screening process with the TSA.
Yes, isn't it amazing that the TSA has been built up as the savior of the United States, yet have yet to produce a single incident where they've prevented or more importantly, detected a breach in through their processes. Okay, they've not identified a substance that was, in other words, they didn't identify the underwear bomber. They didn't identify the shoe bomber. It's always interesting, and this is great that you create the query on TSA, and particularly in reference to your comment about my government commentaries or economic commentaries, and that is this. It is always the case that a tyrannical government makes a political response to a structural flaw, right? The TSA is a perfect example of that. Instead of targeting the root cause of the problem that puts Americans at risk, what does it do? It targets Americans. It targets the otherwise law-abiding citizenry instead of making a strategic move to correcting the fundamental flaw in the process. It is interesting also to note that every one of these alleged conspirators from 9/11, all of which made it through the screening process all undetected. Now, the point of it, again, is not to go sidetrack on this, but it gets to another question that I get asked on this very subject, and that has to do with the government and your rights. I'm amazed at how frequently when I take questions on this very topic or observe questions being asked on this topic, the opposing viewpoint's response is something like this. Well, you know, the Constitution of the United States doesn't guarantee your right to fly. And I just, you know, when I'm on the phone, I want to reach through the phone, or when I'm watching it on television, I want to reach through the television and throttle somebody. And it's only because it shows a fundamental and a protracted lack of understanding of what are constitutional rights and what does it mean and how really inept we are in understanding what the Constitution means and what is an inalienable right. And it troubles me, and I'm sure probably knowing you and reading your Board Affair and commentaries by you, I imagine you feel much the same way.
Well, I mean, it's the Constitution limits the government, not us.
Yeah, it's brilliant, huh? I mean, it's very succinctly put.
It's supposed to, but that's not the way it's being used right now.
Well, no, and whether it's on the issue of tax legislation or military intervention or somewhere along the line, some brilliant person came up with this notion that the government's responsible for providing you health insurance, or the government's responsible for providing you a perpetual retirement, or the government's responsible for providing you a perpetual job, or the government's required to provide perpetual economic stimulus packages for failed economic ideals or ideas such as General Motors, and so on and so forth. We got this weird sort of paradigm that's been created that by government, actually, who has created this as a means with which to perpetuate its existence.
And to create
codependency. You know, I call it, you know, it's kind of like the psychotic or the misanthropic individual or the totalitarian regime that wants to force you to watch a play to deliver a message to you that enforces in your mind, the need that the tyrant should exist. And it's a very bizarre sort of event that we see taking place over the last 40 years. And frankly, what's happened, actually it's gone on longer than that. But frankly, I was asked the other day by a friend of mine who reads my blogs, and he loves to comment on them, and he's what most would call a devout libertarian, and we get into these sort of dialogues with one another, and he said, he had asked me if I thought these were conspiracies. You know, he says, are you a conspiracy theorist? Do you really think this New World Order or this gang of thugs is out there behind the Emerald Curtain pulling levers and such, steering the body politic into these sort of, into these gates as they lead them to the slaughterhouse? And I said, you know, I'm not really into the idea that there is this organized mechanism out there. I said, but what I do believe is that there are a series of devout opportunists that whenever they see a window of opportunity, they slither on through it and take advantage of whatever weaknesses that are out there, whether it's an economic or a military or whatever. And I said, you know, the world is too big. There's far too many people. I mean, you know, we're nearing, 5 billion humans on the planet. I really do think that it's kind of that it's not so much a global sort of mechanism, you know, steering at where we're headed. I do, however, think that, like I said, in the absence of a conviction on the part of the public, insisting on a specific and deliberate outcome, then that leaves the momentum to fill whatever vacuum exists, right? And,
right.
And you can steer it. You know, very little effort is required to get a ball rolling downhill, right?
Exactly.
It really doesn't take much. But when you think about the U.S. as a country, and you think about it in the terms of the 1700s and the late 1600s, you know, the idea that the United States is some sort of coincidence or accident, much like man himself and the belief that somehow we're descendants of apes or whatever, or some sort of Orwellian idea that, you know, some alien came down and mated with, our ancestors, and there we are. I mean, I've heard everything. I just think that when I think about the United States, and I get so excited about it, because it, to me, I find the Declaration of Independence of an intensely spiritual document. And to think that we had all these fellows and these gentlemen converge at a specific time in history, and I'm talking about the Founding Fathers, all of different minds, all each individually aspiring to different ends in their existences, but yet at a specific time and place, they did manage to converge upon a common ideal and develop what became a supreme example to date of the highest evolution of democratic form of government, which we call the Republican form of government, not to be confused with Democrat and Republican, but the Republican form of government, the idea that a government can be orchestrated into a confederation in agreement by the consenting, whether it be states and or their people, the people respectively, who would act on their behalf. This is a pretty powerful idea. And to think that this happened, and again, a convergence of many about a common ideal. How does this relate to your question of the TSA? Real simple. We don't do that anymore. We don't converge upon a common ideal. What we're doing is we are, in multiple facets, having an autonomic response, or what I refer to again as a government political response to a structural flaw. So instead of it coming at it, instead of us governing or moving towards governance from the perspective of the rights of the people, the duty of the government to conspicuously respond in accordance with the rights of the people, we actually allow the complete opposite. And we get TSAs, we get Social Security overfunding, we get Medicare overfunding, we get Johnson and the Great Society, we get Roosevelt and the New Deal, and we get...
Well, Curtis, let me ask you this. How should we have handled the terrorist threat?
Well, I think the first response is you go after where the problem lies. That's number one. I mean, you don't... You know, let's face facts. When we have these bizarre anomalies in governance in the United States that is because of this multiple levels of government. You know, the U.S. State Department, you got the Pentagon over there, you got Health and Human Services over there, and you got all these different little Uber structures within the U.S. government, all basically operating autonomously. But the fact of the matter is that these logical, these sort of bizarre responses, such as the friend of my enemy is, you know, or the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right, where you get all these bizarre alliances. So, for example, theoretically, yes, the smart thing is you go after the problem, right? You go directly to the problem, and you eliminate the problem, right? You can't say that I can have freedom in this country if you're not willing to defend it. Okay, that's the same concept of this idiotic notion about globalism. The opponents of globalism.
Okay, but let me get you back to the terrorists and the TSA. Exactly, what would you do?
What would you do to defeat
that?
Target the problem. You have to get into a systemic process where you vet risks out of the system. If you want to call it, I've just dropped the thought in my mind a second ago where it was right there. If you want to call it. You know, the selective notion of we're going to profile, then by God, then you profile. Because if you're a government of and for the people, then you eliminate the risk. And if that means you profile, then why wouldn't you do that? Why would you not go after the risk deliberately? Okay, you know.
Right. So the answer in this case would be profiling work, and that's what other countries do, and it makes sense that that's what we should do here.
Doesn't that make sense to you? I mean, why reinvent?
That makes sense. Because we're being politically correct and we're not doing what we're supposed to do, and that's happening across the board.
Right.
We're turning this country upside down for political correctness.
Absolutely, and that's why if you look at it from a variety of different concepts, whether it's in how government responds to banking or how government responds globally or how government responds directly to the issue of and we come up with this bizarre Rube Goldberg-esque sort of systemic response in the form of TSA. I mean, it's absolutely. I've been through the airport. I've gone through these events, and I refuse to be irradiated by this detector, which, by the way, has shown there are studies out there that show that it actually emits a levels of radiation 20 to 40 times greater than what the manufacturer specification says. So we're doing all of these bizarre things to one another, and the public, the thing that frightens me the most is, you know, in the name of, well, I've got to get to this place or that place, the individuals are racing through the airport not realizing that, in effect, what they're doing is abandoning their sovereign rights as a human being. And as Benjamin Franklin said, you know, he who gives up his freedom in exchange for security deserves neither.
Right.
And
right.
So
chains rest lightly about their necks.
All right. You know, in my philosophy, and whether it's on my books regarding what the foundation talks about, is whether it's political or economic or spiritual or whatever, I have a philosophy that I think, well, it's not my philosophy. It's a very fundamental philosophy that's native to the idea that lies back of the Declaration of Independence. And it says simply this: man must be free for independence to be at liberty to be expressed. And that's the hallmark. I mean, that is basically the genesis of everything I talk about. Every bit of work that I do, whether it's in my personal businesses or as part of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation, is to get folks engaged in the idea that, you know, we are not ever going to excel to the levels that we're capable of if we're dragging the anchor of excessive or oppressive government around our neck and our feet. Can't tread water for very long with an anchor suspended from your ankles. Just not going to happen. Unless, of course, you move into shallower water. But, you know, it's...
if you've just joined us, we're chatting with Curtis Greco, the founder of the Imperfect Messenger Foundation. Let me ask you this. When did you start your foundation?
The foundation has been around for about 3 years. Its whole purpose is really to simply house an identity for the work that Curtis Greco, me, does. It has a simple message. The mission statement is pretty fun and engaging. But in essence, what the mission statement talks about is really this, and that is that when a message is true, it remains so, despite the imperfections of the messenger. You know, we all come to the table of life with all sorts of an infinite level of potential in each and every one of us, without the expression of which someone lies in waiting, right? In other words, if Louis Pasteur had not showed up and pursued the pasteurization process, or, you know, Wilbur and Orville Wright pursued the, you know, aircraft design and so on, and any number of technical and medical innovations that have come down the pike, then you think of the folks that would not have made it to their stage in life to present and produce the magnificent results human beings are capable of. So the thought being is that, you know, we all, you know, but then again, there's the other flip side of what humans do. I mean, we do stupid things, you know. Sometimes, you know, some of us should not be left out of the cage.
I'm sure that's politically incorrect on many levels.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes I've done some really dopey things over the years, but you know, there are moments that humans just do some absolutely stunning, breathtaking things. And so my philosophy, or the philosophy that we work on, is just to say this: you matter. You matter immensely. But you must never burden your fellow human being with the abscesses of your divisiveness. That we must work forward and call out to one another the ambition and the desire to pursue the best possible outcome in each and everyone's life. This is one of the great flaws of what's happened in this country over the last 60 years, and that is lies at the heart of this abscess of government and abstract issues that have resolved in our economy to create this predation cycle that we're in, where, you know, we call economics vitality giving away jobs benefits, you know, funding joblessness, right? We think we're doing fabulous because we have corporate raiders that can go out and acquire companies, and that we call that an economic cycle, you know, or that we can sell one another houses or insurance policies, and somehow we've got a vibrant service-based economy that's going to create long-standing wealth in this country, all of which is a total crock. But it's the illusions that are created from all of these things, because why? We have lost the concept of trust in one another. We have lost the concept of trust in our systems. We have lost the concept and the mandate that says when you see someone doing something wrong, you call it out and say, no, we don't do that here. No, we can't do that now because it's politically incorrect, right?
What allowed Bernie Madoff to do what Bernie Madoff did, because he didn't do that without anyone else knowing that he did it. Somebody, you know, an accountant, other individuals in the company. He didn't do that single-handedly.
Oh, absolutely, and that's the irony of this recent bank pass, the Wall Street Reform Act. What a total joke this is. This Wall Street Reform Act legalized, by the stroke of a pen, actions that were illegal the moment before the pen was drawn upon the paper. You know, legalizing these abstract form of derivative trading, legalizing these sort of instruments that give rise to these sort of explosive debt accumulation across the board. But your point is really even going one step further. Bernie Madoffs exist, and the Bernie Madoffs of the world exist because they know the system can be orchestrated to allow them.
They know how to game. They know how to game the system.
Right.
Sure.
And
the government is complicit. It's not that we need more laws for something like this not to happen. The laws that were on the books, had they been followed, had the audits been done the way they should have been, it would have been caught.
Well, but more importantly than that, Melody, isn't it wrong? Do you need a law to be able to distinguish whether or not something is right or wrong? I mean, I marvel at this on a query that was given to me and says, well, you know, the reason why this stuff doesn't have, there's no law against it. Oh, for God's sake. There certainly is.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not steal.
I think it's the Ten Commandments.
Yes, thou shalt not steal, weasel. I mean, this isn't nuclear physics. I mean, we're not creating or attempting to figure out who came up with the hole in the middle of the donut. This is not really that tough, you know. And
right.
So I don't think the moment when you have to substitute the law to create a cultural distinction of what is a prohibited act, you know, we're really in big trouble. I mean, it's just pretty sad because, you know, the reality is this, is government does not practice the law to perfect justice. No, government practices law to perfect injustice. And if you doubt that, then explain to me some of the laws that are on the books that allow events to take place which would otherwise be not only illegal, but more importantly, morally reprehensible.
Well, and the people that, exactly, the people that we have elected, and this is why elections matter. This is why the values of the people that we are voting for matter, because we are electing these individuals to lead this country, and they are not following the Constitution. They're not following the basic tenets that this country was founded upon.
Absolutely. But and also just remember that, you know, we have this sort of attempt to have this duality, right? This duality of conscience where we say, well, you know, that's their personal life. That's not how they would act in the political realm. And I've got bad news for you. You are who you are when no one is watching.
Exactly.
That is what is the essence of a human being's character. Now, I tell you what, to the person who says that so-and-so's behavior outside the realm of the political arena doesn't matter, is to simply to say, you know, you're a total nitwit, because it is precisely what matters.
That is how we ended up with Bill Clinton disgracing the White House.
Yeah, I mean, you know, These are national tragedies. These are national mirrors of our individual sense of rational behavior, goodness, just downright purity of thought. And I don't get nonsense with folks who say, "Oh, you know, Curtis, your Victorian era philosophies don't sell well here in the 21st century." Well, you know, I got bad news for you. They better start selling well, because if they don't, if the public doesn't start getting that character matters, that discipline is not a replacement or a salvageable replacement for impulse response mechanisms. If you can't believe for a moment that the idea of once being able to sleep in your home with your back screen door open or your bedroom window open is a sign of days gone by, and you know, we get with it because this is the new world order, I'm telling you that I see no value in moving forward. Right? There is no virtue if there is no nobility.
It's the downfall of a civilization, is what it is.
Well, and I'm just not willing to surrender. You know, Melly, there's no new world to go to, right? There is no uninhabited continents left on the planet Earth. There's 300 million Americans. I think we got them outnumbered. We're just going to have to, isn't that good? I think we're going to have to start thinking about one another once again and looking at each other, looking at our fellow man, looking at our fellow Americans. I'm not worried about the world. I'm not worried about what's going on in Botswana. I'm not worried about what's going on in the EU or in Russia or in China and the charade that's being played by the international bankers in the Pacific Rim. I'm not interested in those people. I'm interested in you. I'm interested in my next-door neighbor. I'm interested in the folks that are going to listen to this show and are sitting there wondering whether or not this guy's for real. Yes, I'm for real. I'm for real because I believe in the ideals that made this nation a place where folks wanted to risk everything to go to. My ancestors from Italy risked everything to come here. And I believe that in the principles that are lasting because they produce lasting results. And I'm not a genius, but I'm smart enough to know that if you find a pattern that's working, don't reinvent the pattern. Duplicate it.
Exactly. Well, Curtis, I appreciate, as always, so much your being a guest on the show, and it's amazing how fast the time flies. I'm sure I could talk to you for another hour without batting an eye, but
I think you're a dream. I think you're just absolutely the very type of messenger that the foundation looks to exalt. We need folks, more and more folks, to engage in this types of dialogue, you know. And as I go out and speak around the country on these issues, there are people there that want to do this. There are people that want to go back, not go back in the sense of going in reverse, but going back in order to move forward. And I think you're magnificent. The things that you do, and I remember our first visit with one another, I enjoyed it immensely. And bless your heart for standing up and being willing to be accountable in the process of perfecting a conversation that needs to be had. Bless you.
Well, Curtis, thank you. Thank you so much. And I wish you a very Merry Christmas. And it's a very special time of year. And you're welcome to come back anytime. So please do. And if I may ask you, sir, what's your favorite charity?
I've got to say Salvation Army.
Okay.
And Merry Christmas to you, Miss Melly. I really do. You're the absolute dream. And thank you for the invitation. And I'd pass through this door step any time, especially when you're the one who opens it.
Thank you, sir. You have a good evening.
You too, dear.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.